Hi, welcome to another Voice Works. My name is Darren Smithson, and as you know, I've been doing these Voice Work sessions now for around 9 months on ideas that can help you with your business or in your personal life. And today's session is going to be slightly different from the ones that I've done in the past, in that I'm going to read you a complete chapter from my new book, which is called What Managers Don't Know and Workers Can't Tell Them. Now, the purpose of the book is to help us all become better managers, better leaders, better business people, and to help you drive forward change in your organization or business to make it a more successful, more effective, but also a happier place to work. So I'm hoping that this book's going to really create a culture change in the way that many of us think about business at the moment. It's divided into two main sections. You have 18 areas of focus, which are really the foundation stones, if you want, for the second section, which is the 12 principles of success. Each chapter is also broken into five different areas. So you have the main text, obviously, which is the actual chapter itself, which will discuss, tease and harass you with ideas, strategies, tools, etc. But they also have four other bits to them. You have try something else. So if you read a chapter and you think this is so applicable to my business right now, I need to do this now, it will guide you to a related chapter, so you've got some more tools and related strategies to work with as well. You've also got take a bite, which are some very simple steps that you can start to take almost immediately. In fact, a good 95% of these sections you can start to apply after you've read the actual chapters that are related to it. Only a couple of them are something that you need to go away and really plan and think about. You've got words of wisdom, which is basically famous people saying statements that support the main point of the chapter. And then finally, you've got coping with indigestion, which is basically common questions that I've heard people ask, or that I think people might be asking as they're reading the chapter, and then has my attempt to try and answer those questions. Okay, hope that makes sense. I'm now going to start reading the main chapter, so sit down in the most comfortable position that you can be in, take a deep breath, put your listening ears on, and let us begin. Okay, I'm going to read Success Principle 6, the Unexpected Guest Principle, which is basically asking the unthinkable question. Your business or service could literally be destroyed overnight, not because you were careless with your finances or a competitor has manufactured a slightly cheaper widget than yours or simply has a better workforce, but because someone, not even on your radar, changed the name and the rules of the game. Think Nokia and Apple iPhone. We've all been through the scenario. We have prepared a small, intimate gathering of close friends for an evening of fine cuisine, music and conversation. But one of the friends brings along someone that you didn't know was coming, and what's more, you wouldn't have invited at all if you'd have known. Welcome to the world of the unexpected guest. Now, such a situation is embarrassing and in extreme cases distressing enough when it's confined to your dinner party. Imagine it happening on such a scale that your whole organisation is left rent and savaged. Unexpected events are a nightmare to try and anticipate and plan for because, of course, they are exactly that, unexpected. So let's give this unexpected guest a name, and we'll call the guest Change. Now, we all think we know what change is and what it does, but I wonder how many of us are willing to accept how funny change can be. It can happen so slowly that we don't really notice it passing us by, or it can happen in a heartbeat, and both forms are fatal if we're not prepared for them, so it's better to be prepared. Let me give you an example. In Chapter 2, on how we should all become our own expert, I made a quip about anyone can make a mistake, said the Dalek climbing off the dustbin. But as I saved it, I remembered that actually nearly all dustbins today are plastic. They are no longer made of metal. Metal dustbins upside down look like Daleks. No, honestly, they did. But the nearest equivalent today, however, would be because the refuse bins are now made of plastic. Anyone can make a mistake, said the autumn climbing off the dustbin. Now, you'd have to be a real Doctor Who fanatic to get that one. But a subtle change in materials to reduce production costs, to collect our refuse, implemented over many years, has done away with a classic one-liner. The fact is that change occurs all the time. Most of it not in the least dramatic or earth-shattering way, but occurring nevertheless. Why, then, is the most prevalent reaction amongst we humans to urge the urge to resist any change when noticed with all our might? I mean, after all, if not for change, we'd still be in the ocean missing out on cars, politics, digital watches and celebrity-driven voyeurism. Okay, so maybe that's not such a good comparison, but you know what I mean. The point is, change is good and is also a natural event, so why not embrace change and in fact even plan to take advantage of it? Words of wisdom. It isn't that they can't see the solution, it is that they can't see the problem. G.K. Chesterton. Unfortunately, there are some pre-programmed response-driven reasons why change is such a bad reputation. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, or things change the more they remain the same. And most of us will have been through some agenda-driven change program at work that was cost-cutting or even worse, solely ego-based and had nothing to do with business agility or service improvement, i.e. change for change's sake. Many of the initial UK coalition government announcements about cancellation of work or changes to policy fell into this camp, having nothing to do with improving service or reducing costs, but was simply about dogma, which is a shame because some of the subsequent announcements have been interesting and well thought out. They are just now tarred with the dogma brush and are therefore not being received properly. But for all that, change is good. Let me give you an example. The internet has changed many things about the way that we shop. Amazon, eBay, eBid and the likes are all good examples of how we, the public, have come to expect shopping for certain goods to be done. I use these primarily for books, gadgets, comics, DVDs and games because I use the internet mostly for shopping for these items. I do sometimes buy food and wine, travel and insurance online too. It's easier and more relaxing and I don't have to leave my work environment to do it. Which reminds me, why do organisations get so heated about employees doing personal online stuff in the office? If I know I can get some shopping bought online in 10 minutes for delivery later, then I'm not likely to go for an hour plus at my lunchtime to try and get it done then, am I? And I've been doing such shopping since before the internet was such an embedded term. But even I was a little hesitant about getting my spectacles online when a friend suggested it to me. This is a traditional approach for getting service, I thought, and not really shopping. Luckily, I realised that such a reaction is what did for the dodo, so I thought I would try it out anyway, and I'm so glad I did. A quick look at martinsmoneysavingexpert.com website convinced me that the one to look at is Glasses Direct, www.glassesdirect.com. Two young men set up a company in 2004, and all I can say about the Glasses Direct experiment or experience is wow. The website is a joy to navigate, the process is easy to follow as 123, and the service is unbelievable, especially when one takes into account the inexpensive charging. For example, £400 designer glasses from £79. It took me just 30 minutes to go to the site, have a look around, work out the offers, pick four styles I thought I liked, and click to send them to me. That was on a Sunday afternoon. On Tuesday, the four sets of glasses arrived for me to try out to see which one really did suit me. I had easy to follow instructions of what to do next, and I am ordering the final pairs tomorrow. This is obviously as I wrote this chapter. Oh yes, and you can get 2-for-1 if you order by the end of September, and there can be different styles and configurations. Easy, elegant, change. So, and I've just pressed this, bear with me a minute, because my computer is now running like a, there we go, we're back. Sorry about that, we'll get back to the chapter now. So change should be embraced by local government and technology adopted and adapted where appropriate, though not in the ways discussed in Principle 3, the Jewish Vampire Principle. Change should also be planned for but implemented only when necessary. The necessary might be because of short-term problems or a long-term identification of a shift in your market, workforce demographics, or possible dramatic shifts. It is vitally important that you take time out and plan for change, and to do this you need to ask the unthinkable question originally posed by Joel Barker in his book Future Vision. Ask yourself, what is totally impossible in my industry that if it were possible would totally change the rules of the game? It's a hard question, but if you were working in California in the vinyl industry in the late 80s producing around 80% of the world's supply of LP vinyl, all you were doing was watching the competitor down the road. What improvements to quality, what savings or what new partnerships have been made, etc. But then along came Philips from a small country in Europe with something that was not an improvement in vinyl, but a brand new technology altogether, the CD. Within 2 years, your vinyl company and most of your competitors were gone. You must plan for such events. And you cannot allow the intransigence of the threatened to block such change. For example, in local government, many councils reacted badly to the community call for action legislation and related policies such as community asset management, participatory budgeting, etc. that were introduced by the Labour government. The reaction was so bad that Community Call for Action was rebranded Councillor Call for Action. The coalition government's plan to enhance this legislation and devolve power still further to community level led to renewed resistance from councillors. The reaction of many elected members in a recent online conference discussing the use of social media to interlock services directly with the public was of the, yes, it's great, but only if conducted through us councillors. Officers should be barred from talking to my voters. In other words, these members fear that direct access to officers would remove the need for members of the public to seek their help. After all, if you can chat round one evening via Facebook to your local environment officer, why would you need to pop round to see the councillor and express your views on number 49's front garden so that he or she can thump a desk on your behalf? However, the biggest thing to understand about change is that when you come to make changes, you have to take your organisation with you. Don't assume that all your staff understand why you're making changes or will accept them gracefully even if they do understand the reasons why. Above all, don't be like a certain local government HR director I know who thinks her role is about suppressing that not to be trusted workforce who can't be trusted to be involved in any necessary restructure, so she'd better just threaten them all with the sack if they don't sign up to the third fait accompli in 2 years. This is not effective change management. Change, however, is a fantastic opportunity when done correctly and for the right reasons. It can even create brand new opportunities for your business and or service. Take a bite. Call a meeting with key decision makers and known thinkers and ideas personnel. Ask the question, what event or development might occur in the future that, however unlikely it might be, devastate our business or delivery? Frame the question with the following statement, nothing is to be considered too off the wall. Brainstorm every possible situation and then review them one by one by first doing a simple SWOT analysis and then possible strategies to deal with it should the situation again, no matter how unlikely, occur. Okay, back to the main body of the book. An example of an industry that should definitely be looking to the future and coming up with strategies accordingly is the airline industry. Around the year 2000, I gave a presentation to influential members of the industry and what was happening with IT and the plans of the major manufacturers and the possible impact such plans might have on their market in the future. As a bit of fun, I included a 5-minute look at what IBM were doing with developments in teleportation theory and technology, including with a real magazine advert that IBM had run in certain highly technical magazines promoting the idea of a desktop teleporter, a device that IBM felt they could have in production within some 50 years. The bit of fun turned into a very heated debate, with the table of air industry leaders splitting down the middle between those who dismissed it as science fiction and those who were clearly shaken by one simple fact. 33% of the airline's industry revenues came from freight. IBM could wipe out that revenue literally overnight if they succeeded in developing devices that could teleport non-organic materials at the push of a return key. My recommendations for the airline industry were to fund quantum entanglement research teams and patent technologies and the applications arriving from their work, and maybe even team up with IBM to develop specific airport distribution solutions. At this time, it seems that the doubters won the day and no such investment program has, as far as I know, been implemented. The opportunity lost here is that even more striking given at the time of the original presentations, the airline industry was incredibly cash rich. In these post 9/11 days, the rising fuel prices and so on, such speculative investments are now regarded as a luxury that they cannot afford to make. I would argue that they cannot afford not to. For example, when Ford produced his first trucks in 1923, one of the world's largest rail companies and one of the USA's biggest companies had an opportunity to purchase the lot. They turned down the opportunity because they were, in their estimation, in the rail industry. They were, in fact, of course, in the transportation industry, and saw their freight revenues cut by 2/3 within a decade. The company itself no longer exists, having gone out of business in the 1980s after decades of decline. Atari and Commodore were in the top 5 PC companies in the world in the 70s and 80s, but they were their own competitors and ignored the growing economies of scale within the Wintel manufacturing base that led to huge price cut drops and technological advances. By the time of the 486, Atari and Commodore were out of the business and education worlds and were dropping market share in their core consumer market at such a rate that they were out of business with another technological refresh from Intel. Today, traditional phone companies such as Nokia have been knocked down and are facing the final count, not because Motorola or Ericsson came up with a better phone, but because two companies not even in the phone marketplace 5 years ago, Apple and BlackBerry, made mobile phones into a completely new media and communications platform. So what tech quake could happen to your industry? Who could come knocking at your door with a brand new way of doing something that makes your delivery service a thing of the past? If you aren't asking these questions on a regular basis and making serious plans to mitigate against the answers, then you risk becoming a vinyl record manufacturer or an Atari or a Nokia. So plan for the unexpected guest before he comes knocking. You have been warned. More words of wisdom. There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things we know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. These are the things we know we don't know. Donald Rumsfeld. Actually, I've read that incorrectly. I'll read it again. What a guy. Right, here we go. There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know. There are known unknowns. That is to say, there are things that we know we don't know. But there are also unknown unknowns. There are things we don't know we don't know. Donald Rumsfeld. Okay. So, try something else. If you've enjoyed this chapter and you found that there are principles that you can apply, it's powerfully combined. It can be powerfully combined with Principle 12, the 99 Monkeys Principle. And to find out what that is, you're going to have to obviously buy my book. Principle 6, the unexpected guest principle, in summary. You must ask and answer on a regular basis, at least once a year, but more if possible, the following question. What event or development, no matter how unlikely, should it occur, cause massive problems for my organisation? Coping with indigestion. Question. How off the wall should we go before things become silly? Answer. Obviously, there comes a point when you have to make judgment calls about some of the ideas or suggestions. The trick, however, is not to dismiss anything out of hand to start with. The format of your unexpected guest workshop should be to first capture any and all suggestions about events or developments, no matter how impossible they may at first appear to be. Only start to evaluate them once that process has been exhausted. Question. Surely we can't plan for everything, though. Answer. Of course you can't. It's impossible to anticipate absolutely everything that should occur at some unspecified point in the future. But if you visit this scenario once a year with your best thinkers, and because they know it's every year they will prepare for that meeting by reading and following a wider library of opinions, then you start to create plans and strategies that form a knowledge bank of tools that could be readily adapted to suit other issues should they occur. Note too that whilst I said have the unexpected guest workshop annually, for the first year I would do them quarterly to create the momentum and culture change needed to start to think beyond what is happening now. Okay, that's the end of the chapter. I hope you found it useful. I'm sorry about the odd little mistake that I made while I was reading it out. I'm not a script reader. I'm someone who's much happier just speaking, really. But hopefully you got the gist of what I was trying to do. Hope you found that useful. The book will be available for download anytime in the next couple of weeks. It will be $2.99. I'm trying to keep the price low because I really want it to sell as many copies as possible. And it also includes within it vouchers for you to get between 25 and 33% off all the training, workshop and strategy courses and workshops that we do. Okay. I hope you go for the book. I really hope you found this chapter useful. There is another free chapter in text format in the ThinkWorks section, a completely different chapter, so I'm giving you two chapters for free. Send me feedback, let me know what you think, and I look forward to speaking with you on the next VoiceWorks. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon. Bye.